Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm going to be talking copper, natural gas, and crude oil as I am chatting with Daryl Fletcher, Managing Director of Commodities at Bannockburn Capital Markets. Now, Daryl, you're working at Bannockburn here to set up a more commodity trading platform, helping some of your clients hedge some of the major indices or major commodities that they hedge in. As we talked in one of our first interviews, is copper and the energy sector. Now, look, commodities broadly have gotten a boost. Rotation of money that really started at the beginning of March has pushed a lot of commodities higher. Let's start with copper. Copper still holding up above 450. It's trading right now at little above 460. Copper, again, has been strong. We've seen majors benefit from money flowing into them. Hasn't really filtered down to the juniors. But when it comes to, let's say, stability of price, we haven't seen the copper price up at this level since more around April of 2022, so almost 2 years ago. Daryl, what's your take on copper, this recent rise that we've seen in price?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Corey. I'd agree. It's been interesting. I've been supportive of copper for the past year, so this is kind of finally doing what everyone thinks it's going to be doing in the longer term. The interesting part is that this front has moved up so sharply. If you're looking at COMEX type copper, you're up 20% on the year in the front, and essentially the curve's kind of flattened out because the front has come up so sharply. But the fundamentals are strong. There was a really good chart, FFC or UCredit, that I saw in the past couple of weeks. I think it did a really good job of explaining this difference of how much production we have, where production is going to be in 10, I mean, where demand is going to be in 10 years, and that gap, the amount of investment that needs to take place to get to that gap going out to like 2034. There's about an 8 to 10 metric ton gap of demand to what is being produced and even what is known to be added. So there's just a big gap there. And I think the market's really reacting to it finally. It seems like it's been a little slow in reacting. Is that all going to take place right now? No. So maybe the front's a little overdone. But you've got, so LME's closed today, LME's holiday in London. But if you're looking at CME copper here today, you've got a flat curve with everything, 460-ish. So you're right, you're at the 2 year high. So it will be interesting to see. It's held up well, this big move it's made in the past month. I mean, if you look at the LME base metal index, it's up 13% on the year. So a big portion of that pull on the LME index of base metals is coming from copper for sure.
Daryl, how do you balance this out in terms of the supply-demand imbalance that there's been major financial institutions putting out these charts showing how we're going to be running out of copper? Some people were even predicting we ran out of copper or we're going to run out of copper at the tail end of last year, and we need higher prices to incentivize development. How do you balance out, again, some of these longer-term projections in terms of demand drastically overtaking supply, and then carry that over to price moves?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's going to have to come from investment. You have to assume that these demand numbers, again, looking at CRUs going out 10 years, are going to be in play. I mean, the internal combustion autos take 50, 60 pounds of copper. Depending on what kind of auto EV you have, it's full battery, you're talking 120 pounds plus. So, and that, then you have infrastructure and wire, everything else has to come through copper. So, yeah, I mean, I saw some other articles looking for 12,000 a metric ton 3 month is the kind of pricing that's going to be needed to incent for big, bigger production boosts. To me, a really flat curve like this, let's say we're going out 22 years, 24 months on COMEX, sitting straight at 465 tells you that's the current market. So could the front, subside here a bit? For sure. But that's it's pretty telling. You've got a really flat curve, and that's not normal.
Is there any chance we would see countries or larger companies enter the copper space through either offtake agreements or through simply project acquisitions to actually control a bit more of where they get their copper from, maybe outside of the standard players that would be in the sector?
Sure. I mean, I think we saw a big offer out last week. I think it was BHP for Anglo, and that's a big copper move for them to diversify from iron ore. But it's still, I still that's existing. That's existing mines. So, an existing known deposits at least. So the development, the cost of the development is going to have to take place theoretically to get to this gap made up in the next 5 to 10 years.
This going to be a U.S. story too? I know a lot of people are looking in the U.S. for copper assets. Do you see the U.S. starting to maybe permit some projects easier, bring some more mines online to have some at least domestic production, more domestic production?
Yeah, you'd hope so. You would think so. There's not, I don't think there's a lot of great, highly efficient mines out there like there once was. So the cost of doing this is going to go higher and higher. And it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy too in these mining projects. So
Yeah, you're right. It does. It costs a lot of money to get them built and takes a lot of energy to just keep them operating. Let's move over to natural gas because natural gas has really started to move after being stuck below $2 and even dropping to lows of around $1.50. We have seen a rebound here up over $2. Currently, as we're chatting, natural gas is at 2.25 right now. What's causing this aggressive move in natural gas?
yeah, it's perplexing what happened late last week to me because the cash prices, the spot prices are just not there. Two things probably have pushed this, and besides probably some positioning, just repositioning of the short. So I think US production, the producers have been disciplined. You have to say that for now. They've been disciplined on the natural gas side. BCF per day numbers are below 100 finally, and they're holding below 100. So producers so far have actually been pretty disciplined. That's a positive. I don't think it's going to make up for this gigantic storage situation we're in, whether that's US, Canada, or Euro. And also the LNG build out of exports. But that's going to take some time. I think Freeport's come back online to some extent. I haven't seen the latest LNG export numbers. That's kind of what's pushed this. And then you get it over too, and you probably have some repositioning on the spec position to push it up a little higher. But if you look at the cash price, Henry Hub cash, US, your $1.65, $1.70 maybe, AECO Canada, your sub a dollar, with a very similar forward curve, very, very steep contango. So I tend to think that the June contract here on natural gas will subside back towards the cash price by the end of the month. I've basically thought that we're going to have a hard time really breaking and closing a contract out over $2. We've got massive storage situation, which is really bearish. The US, we're about 35% ahead of the 5 year. These numbers are rough. Canada storage is extremely high versus the 3 year. I guess it might be 50% higher. And European natural gas is at a 5 year high on storage also. So, the LNG export situation, that's going to take time. And I think there were some projects that have even talked about getting pushed out just due to labor and getting things done. Again, cash prices are cash prices. That's where it really is. So that's going to be an interesting one. I would bet on this closing lower to the cash price as we get towards the end of the month. But the wild card is weather always, and no one knows for sure. If you look at the summer strip for NYMEX Henry Hub natural gas, you're in the 250, 260 range. So that says at least people are betting on, we're going to have a hot weather start here in late spring, early summer. Although the 8 to 10, the 8 to 14 day I just looked at is actually mainly below normal in the east.
So, Dale, you hit the nail on the head there on a couple main topics that I've been reading on. One, storage data. It remains quite high, which should, you would think, keep prices lower. However, these LNG terminals, they're coming online, they're being built. A lot of the bulls are pointing to those as something that could just skyrocket price. Which one matters now? And do the LNG terminals, we all know they're coming, will they have that big of an impact on price?
They could, but I think kind of like copper. I mean, you're 2 years out to really have a big chunk of incremental move higher in LNG. And again, some of the stuff that's supposed to come on in 25, 26 looks like it's not going to quite get there yet either. So I'm still kind of, well, I am bearish on short-term fundamentals and natural gas. The storage is storage. That's a fact. And we're sitting on a lot of natural gas. I mean, you might actually have a bigger issue if these power burns don't start really going higher. at least in the US, where you're pushing up against 4 TCF of storage, which is going to push the limits. So it's going to be very interesting. We kind of need a quick start to a hot late spring or summer to get some power burns going and get some gas moving.
All right, well, let's move over to the oil market then. Crude now below $80, trading right around, let's call it 78.50. But crude's broadly been in a range now for about 2 years. This is in the face of geopolitical issues, wars that are ongoing, although we might have had a bit of a ceasefire signed earlier this morning, from what I'm hearing. What's driving the oil price in your eyes?
I'm a bit surprised that we fell below 80. You know, someone would have said natural gas is going to be at 2.25 and crude is going to fall below 80 a few days ago. I would have been surprised. But I think two things on the crude move there's that have pushed this below 80. The geopolitical premium, as you just mentioned too, is coming into the weekend, has was basically let out over the past week. I wasn't, you know, it's hard to say if that's $5 or $4 or $7, but that premium is definitely let out. And US DOE inventories were strong last week. There was a build of about 7.2 million barrels. They're expecting a draw of two. So you've got a nine or right there alone for 1 week, you've got about a 9 or 10 million barrel delta from expectations. So that's, I think, what's kind of pushed this front lower. We'll have to see. You probably have a little bit of a flush out here too on positioning from the move. We were up over 85. So yeah, I mean, it looks like you've got about a $7-ish premium that was built in for this geopolitical premium part.
Has oil at least established itself in a much higher trading range here, where downside, at least for the producers, is a little bit more protected than, say, what we saw years ago, a decade ago?
Yeah, I'd agree. You're right. This 70 to 90-ish range has been pretty tight for quite some time. So it does look like the floor is going to be a little higher here for a while.
How does that impact the market? Will we see more supply coming online?
Well, the U.S. is pushing as hard as they can. You know, OPEC, they're going to try and keep prices higher too. So, you know, kind of in a stalemate on that from a supply perspective. Yeah, you have to go out 2 years to really have a break up over this 90 range. I thought 80 would hold, but, you know, maybe it's more like a 70, 90. But that seems pretty stable for a while now.
Yeah, it seems to be. Hey, so you're not necessarily seeing any sort of potential to break out, let's say, into the triple digits either, though, are you?
I don't. I think this is a pretty stable spot. If you look out the forward curve, you know, even 26 is holding right there at $70. So you're going from 78 to 70 going out. So it's stabilizing here pretty well.
So when it comes to commodities, kind of taking this big picture, when I brought this in, I mentioned that, look, March, a lot more interest has come into commodities. It's moved a lot of metals prices and commodities higher. Have you noticed more institutional demand? What have you noticed in terms of the investment side, demand-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I think the copper shows that for sure in terms of positioning coming in there, and those fundamentals that have been pretty well known starting to take off. I think a lot of people realize that the hard assets, it's a good diversification going forward in a lot of areas. But metals, you know, again, you're up about 15% on the LMEX for the year. Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a good place to be from the investment side, and it just depends on which commodities you're gonna play in.
Have you noticed different type of investors coming into the space? Have you been getting any other phone calls? You know, any market moves that make you think that other type of investors, ones that aren't usually in commodities, are taking more interest?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you get these moves in copper and crude oil, that you get a lot of eyes on it, that you definitely start to see more diversification from other areas come into these markets. And it varies. It just depends on which ones. I mean, if it's cocoa and coffee have been super volatile too this year. I think cocoa and copper actually flipped below each other, or copper has stayed above it finally for the past few trading sessions. And volatility, you know, volatility always is a good draw for investment. So I think it's going to be a good place to be for quite a while.
That's so true. Volatility can bring in a lot of different types of investors. Also, uptrends can bring in different types of investors. So let's see which ones take hold here for the commodities. But they definitely have come back on the radar for at least some new investors, I think, just thanks to these rebounds that we've seen now, about 2 months long. Daryl, thank you for your time. I find it very interesting hearing from you what you're seeing in terms of a commodities trader helping clients hedge for the commodities sector. Again, you're not necessarily taking long-term positions, but you're helping your clients balance out some of their exposure, which I'm sure makes it a lot more interesting when you do have this volatility. So, Daryl, thank you for your time. We'll chat again probably next month. I'm going to get another recap on what you're seeing in these commodities markets.
Great. Thanks, Corey.